Welcome to Grazing Hell, the one and only podcast made by a cow. And today I've got a very special guest, Jordan Teresa.
Hi!
Yay!
Yay! I'm here!
I love it. I love that you're in person as well.
Yes, very personable, very chilled.
It's the first time we've ever met.
Yeah!
But it feels like we've met before.
It feels very natural.
We've talked before, so yeah. I'm very excited to have you here. Do you want to, in case people listening and watching aren't familiar with your work, do you want to just introduce yourself?
Okay.
Tell us about what you do.
So I make YouTube videos. Me and Tara make very similar videos to each other. Mm. We both do sort of that internet social commentary, link it in with feminism, link it in with sort of wider political things. And I make a video essay every 2 weeks. I try. Can't really stick to an uploading schedule, but oh well.
Because you never know how long the bloody research is going to take.
You never know.
And you've got to cover yourself legally as well.
Yes, exactly. I'm not trying to catch a case.
No.
A lawsuit. Exactly. I literally just make, like, they're like 20 to 30 minute video essays, and I try to sort of link it to feminism stuff, but it's nothing too overly intellectual, because I'm not an overly intellectual person. I feel like your stuff's a lot more intellectual than my stuff. Maybe I'm being modest.
No, I definitely think you're being modest. Like, especially in your sex work video, Jordan did a, what was it, like 50 minute sex work video?
Yeah.
And it was all about sex work. And I thought, like, the theory behind, you introduced me to an amazing book, which I'm obsessed with.
Oh, is it Revolting Prostitutes? Love that book.
That book is honestly my Bible now, because I always, in my head, let's just talk about sex work for a second. I always thought it was strange to me how people, were so anti-sex work, because it seemed like, you know, if you're talking about women's choices and stuff, I know choice feminism has its issues, mm-hmm. but, like, you know, it seems as if criminalizing it causes more problems.
Shock.
Yeah, I know.
What?
Yeah. So that book really just solidified it for me. And the fact that it's by sex workers.
Yeah, exactly. That's the most important thing, is that you have to listen to sex workers when it comes to, like, the conversation surrounding sex work.
I think, you know, you introducing the world to, you know, not the world, obviously, but, like, your viewers.
Yeah.
Because it was out there anyway, but you know what I mean? Like, your viewers, such as myself, I, like, honestly.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. And I feel like with sex working, it really goes one of two ways. It's either, well, at least at that time, I felt like, obviously, apart from sex workers who, like, had experiences and were trying to be as vocal as they could, was people sort of, sorry, I'm stumbling.
No.
People saw it as very, like, black and white thing. It was either, from the internet discourse I saw at the time, as in, like, I'm talking, like, local discourse, not, like, anything deep or intellectual. It was either you're anti-sex work, it should be illegal, or let women do what they want, sex workers are all empowered and all of this. And they weren't, especially when it comes to the all sex workers are empowered, it didn't address any of sort of the deep rooted issues which do come from sex work. And the fact that, of course, there are loads of sex workers who love their jobs and want to do it for the rest of their lives and are really happy and secure in their work. But we also can't ignore the extremely large amount of sex workers, people who do porn, people who are full service sex workers, who have been exploited and abused and driven into it through poverty.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other reason that that subsection of women, mostly women, became sex workers. It's because they were in poverty and they needed to try and get out of it. And I feel like, you know, people will either say it's all bad, or, oh, you should let women do what they want. And luckily with Revolting Prostitutes, that book has so much nuance because it's written by sex workers.
Mm.
And it sets everything out so clearly, and it makes so much sense.
Yeah, I mean, might do a full episode on sex work. Maybe I'll have you back for that.
Oh my gosh, thanks.
Yeah. And maybe if, like, any sex workers want to be on it,
yes,
please. I've been wanting, basically, so the book is, it's called Revolting Prostitutes, what is it, like, the history of something. It had a longer title.
Oof, yeah, no, I can't
but it's
remember.
By Juno Mack and Molly Smith, so check that out. That video, I loved that one. And I think, maybe I could be wrong, but I feel like it was around that time that your work kind of changed.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell us about your YouTube journey? Oh, sorry, just hit the mic.
Basically, my YouTube journey, oh, it's a lot. It's nearly 10 years long, so bear with.
Yeah.
Basically, I started making YouTube videos when I was 14. I got a camera and a tripod for my 14th birthday. And, 14, how long ago was I 14? 2000 and 12. So, and I was a big Zoella fan. Everyone loved Zoella.
You know, weirdly you bring her up. I was actually just like looking at her Instagram last night. She's pregnant.
I feel like my life has come full circle. Yeah. I feel like I'm in her family and I'm like happy for her.
I know.
I'm so happy for her. Yeah, I used to be a huge Zoella fan and I was obsessed with makeup. So I did these makeup videos and I had like this little Samsung camera and like this little tripod. And I honestly was like loving life. And then basically over sort of between the age of 14 to 16, I actually gained like a little bit of a following. I had about 10,000 subscribers, which for my age, that's sick. Sorry. Yeah. I think that's sick.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, buzzing. But basically my biggest thing has always been I'm unbelievably inconsistent. So basically when I was 16 and I actually had like a lot of viewers coming back, like I had 10,000 subscribers, but I get like 5,000 views a video, which was like pretty good engagement for my channel at the time. And then basically I just didn't upload much. I was having a little bit of a crappy time at school. So I just wasn't loving life.
It's not a great age.
No.
14 to 16.
I totally understand. Like I cannot like fathom how Charli D'Amelio, who's 17 years old, has like 50 million followers or something. I think she has more than that. I can't fathom
She's the most followed person on TikTok.
Yeah,
so she's
and I can't fathom it. I was cracking under 10,000 subscribers when I was 16 years old.
That's pressure in itself.
Yeah, like. Exactly. I'm cracking now. I'm cracking now. But anyway,
you're a full woman.
Exactly, and I'm a grown woman with like a fraction of her following and I'm cracking under the pressure. Yeah. But anyways, so sort of between the ages of 17 to 20, I was just making these makeup videos very sporadically. And when I was 18, I didn't go to uni. I left school and I became a beautician. So I was just doing beautician work, you know, waxing, beautician stuff.
Yeah.
But like, I really wanted to be a YouTuber because, not being funny, beautician wages are shit.
Yeah.
So I was like, genuinely no money. It's such bad money. And I was like, I want to be a YouTuber because I remember I seen all these YouTubers who were like, making it, obviously it wasn't just for the money, like I enjoyed making YouTube videos as well, but I was like, I, you know, I can't do this forever, like I'm not making enough money basically. So I really wanted to be a YouTuber, and my videos just weren't that good. Looking back on them now, they weren't sort of up to the standard which YouTube was at that time. And then I made a video when I think I was 20 called I don't like the video anymore and I kind of cringe about
your most viewed video. Why is it always your most viewed video you cringe about? Like,
did you go, eh?
No one likes their most viewed video.
Your most viewed videos are your most viewed video is a good one, so you're not allowed to complain to me.
Well, thank you. I mean, yours is
Instagram models aren't real.
It's good. Don't be silly. It's,
for the time, it was all right. There was no deeper analysis. It was basically just like, don't feel crap about yourself. Most Instagram models face-tune or use really good angles. And it's still on my channel because it's my most viewed video. I'm not going to take it down.
Yeah, no.
But
2 million views, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, 2 million views. So I'm not taking it down.
No.
But they lacked, obviously, a deeper nuance. And I feel like I look back now, it's only been 2 years, but I look back now and I think like, God, it's a bit mean to get pictures of someone of a good angle and a bad angle and be like, see, look. I know, I felt like it was a bit mean of me. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, but what I would say is I don't feel like it came across that way, because I feel like or at least from what I remember from the video, you would preface by saying that they look beautiful in both.
Yeah, no, they do look beautiful.
So I feel like I feel like it didn't come across to you.
Okay, thank God. That's why I haven't taken it down, because to be fair, the video it got like did really well. It got 1 million views in 2 weeks. Which I still haven't managed to replicate. I'm like, what was I doing? What was I doing, and how do I do that again? I was baffled. It got 2 million. No, we got 1 million views in 2 weeks, and I went from 13,000 subscribers, because I remember I was like unlucky number 13. I was stuck on 13,000 subscribers for about 2 years.
Oh.
I went from 13,000 subscribers to 27,000 subscribers, so I doubled my subscriber amount. But I didn't make any videos like that again. I just went back to doing sort of my makeup-y stuff. And obviously, you know, nothing came of it. And I remember being so frustrated. I was like, what is going on? What? Like, I didn't get it. And then the person who I had no idea that social commentary was like a proper thing until I found Tiffany Ferg's channel.
I feel like it's had a renaissance in the past couple of years.
Yeah, because I'd never, like, I'd watched a lot of film commentary stuff. Because I'm really into films. Do you watch films? I'm into them.
I actually don't, but we can talk about it. Okay. I don't have the attention span. But anyway.
Oh, I understand. Yeah, but do you have the attention span for like a 7-part Netflix series?
Yep, exactly. I can watch like 4 episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer in a row, but
I've watched the whole of Gossip Girl. Yeah. But if you ask me to watch The Godfather, I'm like, no.
Don't know if my brain can handle that.
The Godfather is kind of overrated, but anyways.
Oh, really? I haven't seen it.
It's so overrated.
Oh, okay. Well.
And I like to say that I like to say The Godfather is overrated in a smoking area in a bar and just get all the men going and then leave. But anyways,
you were frustrated because you were sort of 27,000.
I was on 27,000 subscribers. I wasn't getting that many views, and I wanted to do YouTube full time, and because I actually enjoyed making videos, and I thought I knew that I was meant to be a YouTuber. So Gen Z. I knew that I was meant to be a YouTuber. And then I found Tiffany Ferg's channel and I found all of these videos where she was just talking about like internet topics. Mm. And I was like, how have I never ever heard about
this
before?
Shout out internet analysis.
Shout out internet analysis. Wouldn't be here if it weren't for you, hon. Honestly.
Yeah, no, I would agree.
So. I would not have done social commentary if I hadn't found a channel. So then I made like a few sort of little sporadic commentary videos. I made one about family vloggers because I don't like them.
Me neither.
And I made one, I'm trying to remember, I made one about, you know those people on Tumblr that like, thirst over the Columbine shooters?
Yes, I do. Unfortunately.
What? Yeah. And you know, it's a thing on TikTok now as well.
Oh god.
I'm like, again, like what I was talking about in like my Lolita video.
Why does
it have a resurgence? And anyways, I think this topic for a different time. I made a video about that. I made a video about porn and how I've taken it down.
I was gonna say, I've taken all these
videos down because they were just like commentary, but I basically made a video about young female porn stars getting exploited by the Miami amateur porn industry.
So how was that for monetization?
Oh god, I got demonetized. Probably got about,
was it age restricted?
Age restricted, demonetized. And the thing is that with demonetization, I don't actually care about the money all that much. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that YouTube, because YouTube aren't making money out of it,
They don't put it out
the video.
No.
So like that, you know that video I made a couple of months ago, it was about kink and rough sex, that got demonetized. And not going to lie, banging video, it was actually pretty good.
Yeah,
and it got like 150,000 views, which isn't, I'm happy with that. But like, if it had got monetized, it would have done a lot better.
Yes.
But anyway.
And it's a bummer because it's about the education. It's not about the money, it's about the education.
Yeah, exactly. Like I want... I want young boys to see that as much as young girls, because I feel like young boys can really be the instigators when it comes to stuff like that. But so I made a video about because it was after I'd watched the documentary Hot Girls Wanted. Have you seen that documentary?
I haven't, but I know of it.
It's Rashida Jones. So good.
Okay.
I love it.
I'll watch it.
One of the best documentaries I've watched about the porn industry. Yeah. Because a lot of documentaries about the porn industry are very like trivial, like, ha-ha, ha-ha-ha. Which like, yeah, sure, a lot of it can be lighthearted sometimes because you're filming people having simulated sex with each other while sometimes their boyfriends and girlfriends are on set watching. Yeah. But also, there are so many deeply rooted horrible things to come out of that industry. But anyways, and then I started around sort of like November time, I decided, I was like, you know, I'm gonna fully dedicate myself. It was November 2019, pre-pandemic. I was like, I'm fully gonna dedicate myself to the commentary stuff, and I have no idea how I did it, but I made videos, but like I only mind mapped them. Like I didn't write a script, I riffed it.
How?
Anybody that doesn't make YouTube videos, like commentary stuff, you script it to a T.
I script it to the word.
I script it to the joke. Script it to the ad lib. Literally, I made a mind map on a notebook and I riffed it. But to be fair, I was talking about very like, I think I spoke about like, I've taken a lot of these videos down, but I spoke about a lot of YouTubers egging on their audience, their young audience, into buying dodgy things, like, you know, that Gabby Hanna Kenza Cosmetics thing, Jake Paul trying to get his 10-year-old fans to gamble.
Yep.
Crazy. I also spoke about YouTubers flexing their wealth, and it's so funny. Me and Tiffany Ferg uploaded our video on the same day, I think, or a day apart from each other. And I think, I can't remember whose one was first, but I remember immediately it was, oh my God, you're copying her.
Well, exactly. Especially because I believe, I mean, she's, I don't know how big she was at the time. She was bigger than both of us.
Yeah, she was bigger than both of us.
Smaller creator will always be told they're the one copying. Yeah,
exactly. And to be fair, I did take a lot of inspiration from her, and my thumbnails were eerily similar. Tiffany, if you're listening, I'm sorry about that. But, you know, our thumbnails were very eerily similar to each other. And then I had, I just carried on. And then the pandemic happened, went into lockdown. So I no longer had to work as a beautician anymore. Like, I was furloughed. Thank God. I was sponging all the money out of that company that I could. And so I got furloughed. And then I was just like, upload video once a week. And it was easy peasy. And God, I'm trying to remember all the videos.
Once a week is quite a lot.
It was a lot, but they weren't in depth, okay. If I'm going to be honest. They weren't the videos that I do now.
I was going to say.
Yeah, they were like 15 minutes long max, sometimes 20 at a push. But I did, I'm trying to remember the videos I did. Did ones about fat shaming, where the fat shaming was seen as a necessary evil, which plot twist, it isn't. It doesn't help anybody.
It actually doesn't. It does the opposite, in fact.
It does the absolute opposite. I did ones about fat shaming. I did ones about, again, family vloggers. I did ones about why the beauty community was like so problematic, why there was always drama in the beauty community. Mm-hmm. Again, sort of very like internet drama kind of things, but like with a little bit of more of a commentary take to it. And then I sort of just hit a bit of a stump, and I was just like, I'm not enjoying it, but I don't feel very you know, when you put out a really good video and you feel like job done, satisfied.
It's the, you just like when you put your heart and soul and you're really passionate.
Yeah, and you rewatch it and you know what, you actually want to rewatch it back for fun.
You're like, this is sexy.
Yes, you're like, that is sick. And I was just like not having that feeling anymore. And then I was taught, and then a lot of people were requesting for me to make a video about OnlyFans. And I messaged one of my friends who is really like nuanced and versed in sort of like sex positivity and sex work. A lot of her friends are sex workers. So I messaged her and I was like, do you have any sort of advice for making this video? Because I don't want to like absolutely balls it up. And she was like, oh, she recommended me Revolting Prostitutes. She recommended me loads of books, sent me a few of her friends' Instagrams to message. And then at this point, I was also watching a lot of ContraPoints and Philosophy Tube. You can sort of tell by the pink lighting. I was very inspired. And I was like, I want to make a nice long form video essay. And that's what I did. And I was really proud of it. Obviously, it got demonetized, so it didn't do that well in the grand scheme of things. But amongst my audience, everyone loved it.
That's something I want to ask. So, like, the transition, because like your content changed a lot. So, like, how did your audience respond to that? Did you lose people?
I didn't lose anybody, luckily.
Really?
I now sort of have a very mixed audience. The sex work video did really, really well because it was about OnlyFans as well. And then I was like, all right, I want to sort of get a little bit more political with it. So I made my working class series, my classism series. Because obviously, you live in the UK.
I do.
This country is a cesspit for classism. It's actually disgusting. Mm-hmm. I was born into a middle class family, but I worked very much a working class job. Or I think it's considered a working class job. Yeah. I was on £8 an hour, like not doing great. I was furloughed at that time. And making like very little income from YouTube. And I wanted to know more about it. And I remember those videos didn't do well on views, but then they hit a sweet spot in the algorithm. And I got more people coming in for those videos. And I also think that like the almost climate around commentary changed at that time, luckily.
Absolutely.
People didn't just want to watch, I don't want to call the videos shallow because they weren't shallow, but they were like not super in depth. They were very sort of surface level, my old videos, which I'm not like unproud of. I think they were, you know, cute sort of little bite-sized things that you can really watch easily and learn a little bit of something. But I think people at that time, sorry, I'm clicking my nails, people at that time wanted more. And absolutely. I feel very luckily my transition came at the very much the right time, I feel like.
Yeah.
So
see, that's interesting to me because I think, now, correct me, like, I think, honestly, this whole commentary renaissance and the fact that you can go really deep and really political, particularly in leftist politics, we could not have done that just a few years ago.
Absolutely.
And I just want to make, I feel like I might even make a video about this. I want to say that people like Cat Black,
ContraPoints,
they paved the way to make the platform safer for us to make content
like that.
Because don't get me wrong, we still get threats or whatever, but like, back then, it was like...
It was completely different.
They would fucking...
Like, I got sucked... I myself got sucked into the anti-feminism hole. And luckily, I only got sucked into the... Like, I didn't think that we needed feminism in the Western world.
It's the algorithm as well. That's the thing. Like, yes. I think... I'm not going to lie. I think... Because I was a feminist. I've always... Not always. But you know what I mean? Even at the time I was a feminist, I considered myself a good feminist. Not one of those like, really, oh, I don't get upset over really stupid things. So some of those videos, like feminist cringe, like I did sort of
I'd be like, oh, I'm not one of those. Yeah, no,
and then you realise, actually, this is literally a tool for radicalisation.
Oh, it's completely like, obviously, very luckily, we didn't get sucked into it because... I was 17 when I was like...
Oh, so you go through that edgy phase.
Yeah, you go through that edgy phase. Anyway, when I was 17, I was like, yeah, no, I don't think that we need feminism. Honestly, I think that a lot of it, for me personally, obviously I can't say the same for you because you were like, I'm a good feminist. But for me personally, I think so much of it came out of self-hatred.
Oh, gosh,
like, growing up, I was always picked on by boys. I was always like... called ugly. I was always like rejected by boys. Boys would ask me out as a joke, like all the time. Like, I've been rejected by boys, picked on by boys. So I thought that saying that I was anti-feminist was somehow, I don't know, getting back at them, like, or maybe trying to get on, like, if you can't beat them, join them kind of thing.
Like the whole pick me phenomenon.
I was a massive pick me.
I was pick me for the opposite reason. I was a pick me because I'd been hurt by women a lot. And I, like, for example, like, I went to a girls' school, and when people cottoned on that I, like, liked girls, like, yeah, that made me really resent women.
Yeah.
So I was a pick me for the opposite reason. Oh my gosh, like, you got
two sides of the pick me spectrum.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, exactly. So yeah
no, it's amazing. It was hard, but you know what? It's always stuff like that drives women to do what they do, and it's because like men are so horrible to me, and I still hold to this day. Like, obviously now I like glam myself up completely, and I've got these same boys that were calling me ugly trying to DM me.
You're joking.
I'm being dead serious. It's sick and twisted. And like, I try not to take pride in it, but sometimes I'm like,
Honestly, I think we all like to think that we've put school and stuff behind us, but that shit stays with you.
I'm 22 years of age, and I was called ugly when up until that age. I'm still left up until the age of 18. And I thought, at 3 years, I'll be over it, especially because now I sort of fit into very much a societal beauty standard that I thought I would be over it. But I think almost, oh God, this is getting deep.
No,
I feel like me conforming myself to fit a societal beauty standard because boys were calling me ugly makes me even more mad at myself.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
I know.
Like, obviously a lot of this is self-expression. Like, I like doing my hair, but obviously nothing exists in a vacuum. I wouldn't look like this if it wasn't for all of these beauty standards and boys calling me ugly. But I think the fact that I like completely changed myself and I tried to make myself as attractive as possible, like, it makes me a bit mad at myself that I didn't just like completely rebel against it. I've technically just given in to them.
Thing is, I think we all do in many, like, in one way or another. Like, you know, I know yours might feel like more obvious because it's like you had a transformation, you had a quote unquote glow up or whatever you want to call it. Like, I didn't see you before, but I we all have glow ups, right? Well, teenagers, you know,
yeah,
puberty's exactly. Not great, you know. No. But I think that's why I find it strange when feminists try and police each other's feminism in a way. They're like, oh, you can't be a feminist if you do X. Like, so, like, with the sex work. So people say, oh, well, if you were a real feminist, you wouldn't be selling your body and all this. And I'm like, listen, we all do things and we might think that we're doing it for ourselves, but it's because of the patriarchy. I wouldn't shave my legs if it weren't for the patriarchy. Maybe I'd wear makeup, but I wouldn't wear it as much, you know? And like, I'd like to think that, you know, I do this all for me, but like, come on. If I'm being brutally honest with myself, there's no reason for me like to shave my legs. You know what I mean? There's no reason to do those things other than beauty standards and where those beauty standards come from. Like, so, but that's not to say that like, if you do those things, not for feminist reasons, you're like a bad feminist. It's just like acknowledging the fact that like we are humans and we can't not, for the rest of our lives, we will be unlearning things and like trying to improve. Like, you're never completely clean as a person, right? Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that does make sense.
Not to say that evades responsibility. Like, if you do bad things, you should be held accountable. But, like, basically, no one is free of this.
Yeah.
No one is free, what I'm trying to say.
Exactly, which is why, you know, like, that was circling back, feel like proper podcasting, circling back. Mm. I feel like we, like, big thank you to Kat Black. Everybody on leftist YouTube, especially the leftist YouTubers who were right wing in 2016 and are now leftist Twitch streamers.
Mm.
I want you to send Kat like half your revenue because you owe her.
Yeah, let's talk about that because you bring up a really important point. So, I mean, let's talk about BreadTube and LeftTube and all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Contra points, Natalie did a Twitter thread and it was all about like the whiteness of BreadTube, and she, you know, points to some really great black BreadTubers or LeftTubers, but they're not considered BreadTubers for some reason because I'm
but
biased.
There's no reason for them not to be considered LeftTubers. I don't understand. The thing is, someone like Khadija Mabawi, who talks about misogynoir
explicitly
about politics, isn't included in these lists.
Yes.
Neither is Teen Noir, who, yeah, she talks about a lot of media stuff, but she always, again, links it to sort of misogyny and misogynoir, very political.
Intellectual media.
Exactly. Mm. But, like, someone, like, you know,
Sam Black, even.
Yeah.
Some people don't include her in that list. And oh my gosh, like, she's one of the oldest BreadTubers.
She is, and people have the audacity.
Not oldest
to say
age,
that,
I mean, on the platform.
She's ancient. No,
yeah, she's like in her late 20s, but you get my point.
No, she's been on the platform for the longest. And also, people, I saw her tweet about this when this whole sort of debate was going on Twitter. People really had the cheek to say to her, oh, your videos just aren't like that engaging and I can't really sit and watch them. You watch a 35-year-old white guy playing a game on Twitch whilst just like slowly explaining his points. That's why I can't watch streams. I find them boring.
Oh, I'm not into Twitch, yeah.
I can't watch streams. And
we talk about attention span. It's just not, yeah.
TikTok
not
is wrecked my attention span. But yeah, no, you can't say that you can't keep up with Kat Black's videos, but you can watch this random guy.
Or even if you want to say, like, your videos aren't for me, fine. They might not be up your street, but don't say she's not left you.
Exactly. Especially when you would not be where you are if it wasn't for her.
That's another thing. You mentioned there were people who were right tubers, or I don't know if that's even a term, but
right,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, and they, alt-right.
Yeah,
alt-right.
And they like transitioned for whatever to be.
To be fair, I'm happy that they changed because when I look at someone like Blair White or Calvin Gavra, who have not made any changes, they still are. So it's like their feet, it's like what, feet in the mud? Is that in the mud?
Yeah.
Their feet in the mud, whatever the saying is, are so stuck in their ways and are so stubborn to not like change like their politics. That obviously makes me more angry. And it makes me, especially the type of politics M2 Britain stands in, because they're both transgender YouTubers and they both spit out anti-trans and trans medicalist
transphobe's dream,
and it makes me sad. It makes me really, really sad. The same way that, like, when I see Candace Owens being like overtly a Republican, that makes me sad because I obviously, you know, it's very, very different. But it does, like, it reminds me a tiny little bit of how, like, I was anti-feminist in 2016 because I literally hated myself.
Mm.
And I feel like a lot of it is, obviously, I don't want to do, like, a psychoanalysis of people that I've never met before and I don't want to sound patronising or anything. But, like, I feel like it's rooted in a lot of self-hatred.
Here's something that's really cynical. I have a counter-argument.
Mm-hmm.
maybe, sadly, it's a grift. Maybe it is. I don't know if this is really cynical. Some people that do this, I honestly think they just care about the money.
Yeah, no, that's actually a really, really good Milo, point.
Like Milo, I don't fucking care what his name is.
Nazi. Milo the Nazi.
Yeah, he defended paedophilia.
A lot of it is for
money. I mean, he literally just did it for the money. Like, I mean, maybe he's a self-hating gay, but he just wanted the attention and the money.
Yeah, no, and Blair White makes, like, from what me and you obviously know a lot about sort of monetization and how ads work and how much money you make, Blair White is making bank. Mm. But have you seen, a lot of it's backfired on Calvin Gara very recently. Have you seen?
Yes.
I've forgotten what the YouTuber was called who made
Cops
those videos.
Hates Mo.
Yes.
They made a brilliant, I believe it was two parts, but I don't know if I've seen the second part. Apologies. The first part was at least like an hour, and they went through basically the really devastating impact of Calvin Gara's content on trans, not just trans people, but disabled people.
Yeah, just like all these really small creators who, they got ripped for fun. And like, they put their stuff in the public, but this, like, you can't do that.
They led Calvin led a charge against these people. There was someone, apologies, I can't remember their name, but they had people
accusing them of faking their disability
and therefore trying to get their benefits removed, like their disability. Yeah, that's an example. And listen, I get it. You can't control your subscribers, but you influence them.
Exactly.
And if you watch Calvin Gara's content, there is no denying that he was influencing that and he was not condemning it.
And he doesn't care.
No.
One thing that I've really learned from YouTube is that one thing which I said in my Lolita video is that I never put in videos or TikToks or sort of social media things of people, usually of people who are under the age of 18. Because I think it's a bit peak. Do you know what I mean? And especially if they're smaller, like even if you just put a funny little TikTok of a 14-year-old girl romanticising Lolita, I don't know what my audience, obviously my audience is very mature and they're lovely people.
But you're always going to get
assholes. But you know, yeah, exactly. And I don't know what my audience would do with that if I put in a video of a 14-year-old girl on TikTok romanticising Lolita.
Exactly.
Which is why I didn't put it in. I just explained what
and
it was.
And I have so much respect for that. And also it's just like, I was a complete mess when I was 14. Some of the
exactly.
stuff I believe. So, like, you know, the issue isn't them. The issue is that there's a reason that they're romanticising Lolita at 14. That's the problem.
Exactly. And,
it's
like, that's just to do
with,
that's just, obviously, Lolita, it's a very small thing. But when it comes to what Calvin Gara was doing, these were people who, a lot of them were neurodivergent. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Neurodivergent. A lot of them were just people who were trying to figure out what was going on with their gender expression and their sexuality. And his sort of bloody dumb argument, his argument of, oh well, if they really transition, then they're gonna get dysphoria and transition back, so I have to make these videos humiliating them and laughing them to the point where people dox them. I have to do it for the people, for the trans community, to protect
such
the
bullshit.
It's such a load of bullshit. It really, really is.
And the argument that, like, oh well, you know, this is why people don't accept trans people, because of these trans trenders. And it's like, transphobes are transphobic, and just because you might be like a good whatever, like, and this applies to any minority, you might be like one of the good ones when it comes to women, for example. If they only accept you because you feed the line of bullshit that they want to hear, they don't accept you.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
So it's just a performance.
Exactly. And the whole thing with transphobia at the moment is that it's all just repeated talking points of homophobia in the 90s. Like a lot of people used to say it about gay people who were
overtly
overtly feminine, or well, gay men who were overtly feminine, or gay women who were overtly a bit more masculine, or gay people who were publicly affectionate. They used to say, oh well, I don't care what you do, just don't do it in front of me. Or I don't mind gay men, but don't be like all gay in front of me. Mm. Like that's what that is, the exact same thing about trans people, isn't it? It's the exact same thing. And or I'm very
teaching about it will mean that kids will turn trans. They said that about gay people.
Exactly. Margaret Thatcher, yeah, like literally said that. That's why you, loads of people can, didn't she like revoke?
Can't teach about gay stuff in schools.
Yeah, no, yeah. Exactly.
Exactly. And that I wanted to circle back actually, because what you were saying about Cat Black, and I think it's also worth noting that people like her made the platform safer to make content like we do and paved the way. But it's also worth noting that there were people chased off the platform. And I kind of want to talk about that, because I think, were you aware of a creator called Riley J. Dennis?
Yes.
The shit she got. Like, she was another one. She was another target of Blair White.
I can't remember what their, I don't know what their pronouns are at the moment. But they had glasses, short hair.
Mm.
Their name began with an M.
M.
Oh, Blair White used to pick on them all the time.
Not familiar with them. Someone else who got targeted by like MRAs was someone called Marina Watanabe, I believe is how you pronounce it. And she made like feminist content. And here's the thing, the content wasn't even that. Like in today, like it was literally just intersectional feminism, nothing, I don't want to say not radical, but like it was all like stuff that I would say is quite inoffensive, right? It's the same with like Anita Sarkeesian, like, you know, her videos were literally just critiquing sexism in video games, and for some reason that warranted death threats. And yeah, it's just like, this is like, if you think this is radical, like you should hang out with like fucking eco-feminists. You should like you don't know. Like if you think that's radical, mate, exactly, you don't even know the half of
exactly.
it.
If it weren't for them, I wouldn't have been able to upload a video called Men Still Hate Women and right. have a decent like to dislike ratio. Yeah. It's still not great. I still get comments of abuse every day on that video of men that just can't hack it.
Yeah.
Men that just cannot hack it.
I am really pissed off the men with my pickup artist video. You know, that one that's like 40 minutes. And it's so funny because it's like, I'm not even talking about men per se. I'm talking about pickup artists. But they took that as an attack.
They made a self-insert. It's their fault,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that is, yeah, hilarious. And let's talk about politics on YouTube. So you veered from like quite apolitical content to very political content. Is that because you became a more political person, or was that something in you that you were hiding and then you brought out?
So it's sort of a bit of both. Mm-hmm. I've always been Labour supporter because my mum is a Labour supporter, and I've grown up with sort of the notion of like, if you ever vote for Tories, you are not allowed back in this house. Like, my mum is like, she's not like super, super hardcore left wing, but she knew, you know, Tories bad. So I always voted Labour in my sort of local elections and then the general elections and stuff. And big Jeremy Corbyn fan, love Jeremy Corbyn. And basically at that time when I learned about sex work and decriminalization, and especially involved in prostitutes, they talk about open borders, and I'd never heard of the concept of open borders before.
Yeah, the first time I heard that, my mind was a bit blown.
Exactly. So I was like, oh, okay. And then I really, really got into politics, because I was like, I wanted to make a video. Basically, the plan was I was going to make a video about people on TikTok who pretend to be working class, or sort of like have like a working class aesthetic whilst being like middle class and from Ealing. Like, rah, where's my backy?
Right.
Like, Alexa, play Them Boy Pagan by Jay Huss. Like, those types of people. And it wasn't meant to be like that deep. And then I read the book Chabs by Owen Jones, and it just opened my eyes to all of this left-wing stuff. Like, and I learned all about classism. So I made a video all about the work, like the demonization of the working class. And to be fair, at that time, it didn't do that well on my channel. You know, you have that 10 system, which I hate.
Basically, YouTube does this thing where it ranks your latest 10 uploads and it tells you how your current video is doing within that.
And so it's all great if it's 1 of 10.
Yeah, if it's 1 of 10, you get this confetti and it's great. If it's 10 of 10, it's basically your worst performing video.
And you like want to cry. My Lolita video was 10 of 10 when I first posted it. And I was like, I am going to end it all. But also, I remembered a lot of YouTube mutuals have all been getting tens and tens at the moment because everyone's out.
Yes,
no one's watching stuff anymore. And also with video essays, like what I do with video essays, like when you upload one, I'll be doing something, I'll be like, all right, I'm gonna watch it tomorrow.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So it builds up over time, yeah. Luckily. But yeah, no, so that got, anyways, so it got like 8 of 10 and I was like, oh damn it, I worked really hard. Mm. I read a whole book. Oh well. And then it hit a sweet spot in the algorithm. Did really well. People asked for the part two. Mm. So I started researching about gentrification and obviously living, both of us live in London.
Yes.
Gentrification, bit fucked to say the least.
Yes.
Like,
it's a big problem, especially in East London, I would say. I mean, it's a problem in all of London, but I think East London is.
Yeah,
really
like you can't even afford to live anywhere anymore. No. It's a joke. Like,
and people who are long, like generations of families living in, like, for example, like, places like Bethnal Green or whatever are being priced out.
Completely, so. Completely priced out. Yeah. And it's like annoying because I'm going to move sort of, obviously, you know, I live sort of, I don't want to reveal where I live, but I live in London. And I want to move somewhere
else.
Far
out.
I live, yeah, far out. But I still like, I'm in London, ish. and basically I want to move a little bit further in.
Yes.
But like, all areas are gentrified or in the process of gentrifying, and I don't want to take part in that process.
Yes.
But also I can't help it.
Here's the thing. What I would say is the conversation around gentrification is interesting to me, and I agree, like, with everything you're saying, though. Someone, are you aware of a creator called Cal Lauren? Mm-hmm. They're a graphic design YouTuber, but they also get very political on Twitter, and they were talking about how a lot of the discourse around gentrification misses the element of the fact that landlords are, like, the problem with landlords, and that housing in itself should be more publicized. Yeah, but you know what I mean? Nationalized.
Take that clip out of context, yeah, everybody. Yeah, yeah. Spread it like wildfire.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, affordable housing should be a right, right? It's not. It should be, but it's a right, you know, that kind of thing. And gentrification is like a symptom,
mm-hmm.
more than the cause necessarily.
Yeah.
So by you, okay, obviously I don't want to take part in it. That being said, like you say, in order to live, you kind of are wherever you are. And I think, like, it's the whole system needs changing. You know what I mean? If that mm-hmm. makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, abolish landlords, basically.
Right, exactly, exactly. Yeah, it's just, so, like, I agree with what you're saying. But what I would say is that I think personal choices aren't going to make that much of a difference.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, obviously, you can do little things like support local businesses, which have been there for a long, long time.
That's what I would say. If you're going to move into an area and you're, like, living in a flat that is more expensive than everywhere else there, don't be a dick. Don't, like, mm-hmm. you know, only go to really expensive places. Go to the family businesses, shop at your local market, support, yeah. you know.
Go to the offie, go to the off license.
Yes.
Love an offie.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah. Living is expensive. Being alive is hard.
I did not ask to be put here.
Yeah,
here I am.
I did not ask to be born.
I don't like it.
Exactly.
Oh, but
so yeah, we're talking about politics and
you yeah. So I got and I just got so into it. Mm. Like, that was the start, and I just got so deeply into it. And basically, I think when everything clicks, you're almost like, why isn't everybody left wing? I don't understand. And I think that one thing I do understand why people aren't left wing, not that I agree with it, is money. Yeah. Like, at the moment, obviously I used to be a beautician, I wasn't making very good money, and I was sort of really, luckily I lived at home, but I was struggling, like struggling in the sense of I just flushed all my money away and I just didn't know what to do. And then now I obviously YouTube, very luckily, it pays well. It's more money than I've ever had in my entire life.
Same, yeah.
And I think that I don't understand, but I see why people would be like, oh, well, I want to pay less taxes because I made this money.
So this is another thing. It's really interesting. And there's numerous studies have been done on this. The more money you have, the more protective you are over your money. So like, which is really interesting. Because like,
yeah, I didn't necessarily spend more money when I was a beautician, but I was definitely a lot more... not necessarily frivolous, or careless. But I was just very much
you didn't
much
think
like,
about savings because you weren't going to get savings anyway.
Because I couldn't save. Yeah. It was impossible.
So you're just like, well, I may as well spend it whilst I've got it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Whereas I think the more money you've got, the more frugal you are. And often, sadly, if you've got a lot of money, the less likely you are to want to share it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's just, yeah, it's fascinating, really. Yeah. You can help. You have more money to help people, but you're less willing to help
yeah,
people.
Yeah, but also, I obviously think about the fact that there's so many people in this country. So one of the richest countries in the world, there's so many people living in below the poverty line,
yes.
Really struggling. And also, I think about my, like, 19-year-old self who was on £8 an hour and couldn't even dream of even moving out. Like,
yes.
Unless I got a flat share, and even that would be half my wages gone,
mm-hmm.
just on rent and bills.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about that, and that is why I'm a strong believer in everybody, no matter where you're from, get a minimum wage job once in your life. Get a customer service job. Get, just so you know, like, live on those wages for a couple of years, because I'm telling you, it would give a lot of people perspective. I think.
I mean, from working in customer service job, like you say, yeah, same. This is the most stable I've been financially, and you know, I've pretty much only had like sort of retail-y type jobs,
mm-hmm.
before this,
like per hour jobs. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, no, not salaries.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell, I mean, there's a word for them, Karens, but like, it's not just women. Like, you can really tell people who, like, if they've never worked in like customer service or retail or any kind of, minimum wage.
Yeah,
work.
And you can tell it from their politics.
Yes.
You can tell it from their politics.
Exactly.
And you know what's so funny? Remember I got into an argument with my builder. We had the builders in, and basically he was like, I saw your YouTube channel, you're so left wing. Nah, 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 nah. And I was like,
You saw your YouTube channel?
Yeah, he found my YouTube. To be fair, he's a family friend. He's not like a random builder.
I was gonna say that.
No, he's a family friend.
That would be weird.
No, my,
okay.
my stepdad works in trade, so he knows
a lot of people. Gotcha.
And basically, I was just like, well, yeah, no, because he's like, we're talking about wages and stuff, and I was like, well, you know, to be a beautician, sorry to talk about my beautician life so much.
No,
to be a beautician, you have to train, you have to do courses, you have to, you know, it's skilled, you have to be qualified to do it, because it's anatomy at the end of the day. Like, sorry, but if I'm waxing someone's vagina, I could do some serious damage.
Yeah.
Like, so it's something that I trained to do. Yet why did I train for so long yet get scraps for pay? And I was telling him, I was like, it's not fair. And he goes, well, train in something else. I'm like, who's gonna wax your girlfriend's vagina then? What if everyone just decides to not do badly paid jobs? And who's gonna do the badly paid jobs? If everyone, oh, sorry, I'm going around in circles.
No, you're right. No, but you're absolutely right.
It was very annoying, because he was like, well, then everyone, like, if you don't like your pay, get a new job then. I was like, what if everyone did that? Then what?
Yeah, and also, to say that, it's like, A, I'm assuming, was that pre-pandemic?
Oh, no, it was during the pandemic.
I remember at the beginning of the pandemic, before YouTube went off, like, I still am like a photographer. I'm very lucky to be freelance and that kind of thing. But because of the pandemic, I was like, okay, I need to get like go back into customer service. I need to sort of do that. And there was nothing.
Yeah.
Like, because all the jobs were snapped up because of the demand.
A lot of people, luckily, I quit my job before I even went back, because my YouTube wasn't doing well. I said to myself, as soon as I match my beautician wages, I'm leaving, because I can live off of this. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So as soon as I matched them, I left, because I hated my job. But I didn't hate my job. I loved it, but I hated the company I was working for.
Okay.
So it was so funny. The day that I quit, I'd called my manager. I was like, I'm not coming back, by the way. I'm going to hand in my notice now. Bear in mind, I'd probably sponged about 5 months of furlough.
And well, then that's the government.
She was like, yeah, no. And then she was like, oh, I was going to ask you to come back like today. I was like, oh, tough. But yeah, no, yeah. Like it was tough. Like luckily I managed to be kept on, but I'm sure there were plenty of people who were not kept on.
Oh.
And now I feel bad.
No.
I feel bad. To be fair, I did intend on going back.
Yeah, but also, you know, that exactly that job, you know, can go to someone who wants it and needs it.
Yeah, exactly. Now there's an available job, is that correct? But, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think, well, that's the thing with, like, I think when you're into leftist politics, like, and you read all about, like, especially, like, the economic side of it, and, you know, I know what you mean in terms of why isn't everyone else, because it seems, you're just like...
It seems like common sense.
It would like, fix so many issues. But then I suppose that... People, I don't know, for some reason...
It's people are very just selfish. I'm going to put it very, very bluntly. People will put, like, a lot of apolitical people just put stick blinkers on. So they don't have to think. And when you actually open your eyes to a lot of it...
I'm not into politics.
I'm not into politics, or, I'm a Tory, but I'm one of the good ones. Oh, sorry, get out of town, mate. Don't even. Oh my god. But yeah, no, like basically those apolitical people, I can understand how they do it. They just stick blinkers on. I know loads of people like that. I just stick a lot of obviously not leftist YouTubers, but a lot of just YouTubers in general stick blinkers on. A lot of people don't vote.
Yeah. Wow.
I know a lot of YouTubers who don't vote.
You do?
Mm-hmm. I know of.
You know a lot of YouTube. I was going to say.
Yeah, no, I know. I don't. I know, like, I have a lot of mutuals and stuff. And I've heard through the grapevine that there are a few YouTubers who do not vote.
No.
Yeah.
We can talk about that after. don't want to get sued. Don't want to cause.
Oh, yeah, no. Don't worry.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, like, I was curious, actually, because you talk specifically about UK politics quite a lot. Mm-hmm. Is most of your audience UK, or is that not necessarily?
No, at the moment, obviously, because I changed my content again.
Yes.
My audience is very mixed. It's okay. I'm pretty sure it's about 50, it's not 50-50 America, UK, but it's like 50 UK, no, 40 UK, 20, 30 America. And then that rest of percent is sort of
that's
scattered.
That's so interesting. Mine's very different.
It's so funny, though, yeah. Because the amount of... I posted this meme, like, months ago, because everybody on my Instagram knows how much I hate Keir Starmer. I post about him all the time because I hate him.
For any Americans listening, Starmer is the current leader of the Labour Party, and he's, like...
useless.
Right.
Quickly
add, he was also like a terrible choice, and there was a leadership election and there were perfectly good candidates, and he was picked even though he was the guy that made the Brexit policy that a lot of Labour people blame on them losing the recent general election. So it makes
sense. And he used to be a cop. He used to work for CPS.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Sorry, anyway, you were saying, you post memes about Keir Starmer.
Yeah, no, I've posted a lot of memes about Keir Starmer because I hate him, and then I saw this, my boyfriend sent me this tweet, and it was so funny. And it was, why do UK people know so much about US politics? I doubt that Brad from California knows who Keir Starmer
so
is.
So true.
So I posted that on my story, and the amount of people that replied, like, yeah, when you post about Keir Starmer, I've got no idea who he is. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you poor people. Yeah. Listen to my Keir Starmer rant.
I love them, though. The thing is, I think the reason for that is also, well, one, the media is very America-dominated, and, like, America, and by the way, I don't mean the people specifically, but, like, the institutions think they're, like, the whole world. They're like, America's the best country, and you're like, isn't it? You don't have healthcare. Yeah, but I think American politics is just a lot more entertaining.
There's a lot of characters. Also, I feel like American politics is actually a lot more easier to follow.
Yes.
There's president, there's vice president, and then there's a few famous senators.
Yes.
I feel like UK politics, it's a lot more complicated, in my opinion, because obviously they have a two-party system over there. Over here, technically, I guess it's two parties. Basically, it's either Tories or Labour. Mm-hmm. But also, there's Lib Dem, there's Green, there's also UKIP and BNP and all of this. And I feel like UK politics, and then there's also the Andrew Marr show, where all politicians go to get roasted, basically.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, I feel like UK politics is a lot more complex. And I feel like there's just a lot more, like, nuance to just knowing what the UK is like. Like, a big thing about the UK is that a middle class person will vote Tories, but also a working class person will vote Tories.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole, it's a whole like nuanced thing. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Yeah, because of how the media works over here, and how the media, like the Sun and the Daily Mail, they are conservative newspapers, but they're seen as centre when really they're very
tabloids.
Right-wing.
I think calling them newspapers is a bit
true. That's very
you're being
generous.
Too kind.
That's very generous. But yeah, so basically, a lot of unfortunately, some working class people will read a Sun article about how there's too many refugees in this country, and that's why their benefits are possibly being cut. And instead of blaming the government, they'll blame refugees.
Yeah.
And then they will look at the manifestos and they'll see that conservatives want less refugees. So they'll go and vote for conservatives, even though conservatives hate the working class.
Mm.
Yeah. But to be fair, Labour isn't doing that great at the moment either.
I think that's one of the things.
Is that Labour just hasn't done anything for them.
Yeah.
So to be fair, I understand why Labour has lost so much power over the years. Jeremy Corbyn had it good for a while,
but his party didn't like him.
His party didn't like him at all, and he got sabotaged quite a lot, and the media didn't like him either. No. Basically just got completely smear campaigned.
He kind of had a similar ish, not quite the same, because I think he still holds like office, but it's a similar treatment to how Bernie Sanders was treated. Mm-hmm. In a way, I don't want to say they're exactly the same, but yeah. You know, Bernie, you know.
Well, he's just singing as like, you know, they always throw Marxist,
yeah.
Socialist,
and
communism.
He's just a nice old man that
do you
just
remember broadband? Yeah, it's like, do you remember broadband communism?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And that, to explain that, basically, Corbyn just wanted to sort of nationalize Wi-Fi because we live in a digital age, and like in order to get a job and in order to work, you need Wi-Fi.
Exactly. In order to succeed in school. You need
yes.
Wi-Fi.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, and that was the thing with lockdown as well. Like, I mean, my mum's a teacher, so, mm-hmm. you know, if you are a kid in a household that doesn't, I mean, they were given, like, iPads and stuff, but even then, it's like, you need a strong Wi-Fi connection. So
exactly, you can't properly take part in a class with, like, one bar of Wi-Fi,
right.
Which is shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and then basically Jeremy Corbyn was like, Wi-Fi for everyone, and then they called it broadband communism.
I love that.
Exhausted. Yeah. I'm exhausted.
So now that we've talked about UK politics for a bit, I want to just sort of steer it to something slightly less depressing. What do you think the future of your channel is, Jordan?
Is that,
that's a nice question. Right? Well, I don't want to. Well, I say that, but then
we went
YouTube
from broadband communism to at the moment, I just want to make enough money to be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, obviously, I hate to talk about money, but a lot of YouTube is about money. I want to be able to make a living.
Life is about money.
Yeah, I want to be able to make a living. I want to be able to enjoy my job, not have severe imposter syndrome all the time, which mm-hmm. I've been getting a lot better at. And just make video essays about stuff that I like. Mm. My ultimate subscriber goal is 500,000. I don't want any more than that.
Yes, I feel like Tiffany Ferg made a video on that recently. Once you hit over a certain number, you don't feel as connected. And
yeah.
I mean, I'm not even anywhere near that. I'm on like, I don't know.
I think me and you have basically the same.
We're the same. We're like on
250.
Yeah, something like that. And I do feel like comparatively to when like I had like 50K, it was like, I felt like I could talk to almost everyone, even though 50K is a lot of people, but you know.
Yeah, and you recognise faces and stuff. Yeah, no, you stop, unfortunately, it's a little bit sad, you stop recognising comments and stuff. But I don't mind, obviously, I'm very, very grateful.
Yes.
I never think too far into the future because I get really existential.
Of course.
Literally just make YouTube videos. Obviously, I can't love my job all the time, but somewhat enjoy some of it. And just be happy.
Good. I'm glad. No, I'm glad to hear that. I mean, if you don't mind me asking, you recently took a break.
Mm-hmm.
What made you decide to make the video on the Lolita resurgence? Do you want to sort of tell us about that video?
So basically, I took a very big 5-week break because I just felt so uninspired, dead. I hated all of my videos. I hated my channel. I had no idea why I was successful. Ooh. I had no idea. I was like, why are people watching my videos? They're so bad. Like, no idea. And obviously you DM'd me and gassed me up and I was like, thanks, guys. but yeah, no, I literally had no idea how I even managed to, especially because I think a big thing about YouTube is that as soon as you get successful, you're like, what the fuck do I do now? How have I managed this? How the hell have I managed this? So basically I was going to make a video about this like whole Chuggy phenomenon. And also I had a sponsor. So I was like, oh, you know, I've had about this Elisa stuff, but I'm not going to, you know, do too much about it because I've got to try and keep this video, you know, squeak clean for a sponsor. But basically it just kept running through my head. And I kept like, you know, when you're saying, you know, when you're like doing your things, but you're like practicing a video script in your head, thinking about what you can write down.
All the time.
I do it all the time. And it wouldn't leave my head. And I was just like, oh my God, I have to make a video about this. So I messaged, I have a manager who does all my sponsors for me. And I messaged him. I was like, can you tell them that they have to accept the video about the paedophile book, otherwise I don't want it. Like, I literally said to him, I was like, I really want to make this video. And it had like a sponsor, and the sponsor had a deadline, and I wouldn't be able to do two videos in time. I was like, please explain. Like, it isn't like, it's a very nuanced video, it's gonna be good. He was like, I'll see what I can do. And they're actually fine with it. Like, yeah, it's fine. And I was like, okay.
Well, the sponsor was period stuff.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. It was so I think they're Intermina. Probably... So right. Yeah, no, they were totally chill with it. They were like, obviously we're gonna have to rewatch the video, right, watch the video through, make sure you say anything that isn't dodgy, but obviously I didn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, so I just fell in a wormhole because I was thinking about romanticization, and I was thinking like, that there must be a catalyst for this. How has this happened? And then I started reading into the movies and even something as little as book covers, how book covers affected the way that people perceived Lolita, and how young girls can be so easily influenced by singers and social media. And yeah, no, that's basically what made me want to do it. And it turned into a lot of a bigger thing than it was.
So, you know what I was reminded of? I was reminded of you the other day because you talk about Adrian Lin's film adaptation of Lolita and how it kind of romanticizes it and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, I watched a recent video, which unfortunately was age restricted by YouTube, and she had a sponsor. Do you know Broey Desjardins?
Yes.
Yeah. She recently did a video all about sensual dance, and she talks about, what was that film by Adrian Lin?
Fatal Attraction.
Isn't that one? Yeah, maybe.
Is it the one where they have an affair and then she tries to kill him and his wife?
Oh, no, I don't think it's about. Sorry. It's about sensual dance.
Okay.
So it's not Flashdance, it's one of the other ones, not Showgirls, one of those. But I was just thinking, with Lolita and all that stuff, I'm like, obviously it would be really traumatic, so only if someone feel comfortable, but I feel like a good adaptation of Lolita would be by either...
directed by a woman.
Yeah, or someone who is like, either, I don't want to say a victim of abuse because I don't know, that I feel like that would be really triggering, but like someone who is just acutely aware of it.
Well, even like, what do you call it? Therapists, psychotherapists.
Yeah.
For films like this, they need to have psychologists. They need to have people who, you know, have, like, because there are, I'm sure there are people out there who have, you know, been researching about how people get groomed for years and years and years, and the psychology behind grooming. You need to have people like that, not just Adrian Lyne, who, no offence, from the interviews that I've watched, seems like a creepy old man. They don't need him. Oh, I can't stand him.
He's a bit skeevy, to say the least.
Yeah, but a lot of male directors
are
like that.
Well, that's the thing, Hollywood is creepy.
Am I shocked? Absolutely not.
No, I mean, exactly. So... yeah, exactly. I mean, there's certain pieces of media that if I could redo them, I would want to redo them through like a feminist lens. And you're interesting, you were talking about grooming. I think you can, in a way, be groomed by media in a weird way. Like,
yeah. Like, oh, this is a very hot take. Oh, this
no,
is hot
please,
take.
Please.
How Michael Jackson basically groomed the world into thinking he wasn't a nonce?
Yes.
Okay, good. So I can show you weren't someone who didn't. Obviously, this is very, very controversial.
This is really... okay, yeah. We'll say allegedly in case...
allegedly.
I know he's dead, but his estate is not dead.
Yeah.
It's really interesting you say that because I honestly, as a kid...
was obsessed with him.
Well, no, opposite.
Oh.
Interestingly, fortunately, I never experienced abuse, but even as a child, I felt something was off about him. The fact that he was like a grown-ass man being friends and having sleepovers with kids as a kid, because I had a friend at school who was obsessed with him, and I was like, I think he might be a And she was so angry with me for saying
no,
that.
Even if you say it now,
people are like, how people dare are, you?
Like, the, it's like, it's very much the common thing to think that he didn't do it.
Really?
Have you all go on Twitter? It is the common.
I haven't looked.
It's the common.
I knew his I want to say alleged, so I don't get sued, victims who did the documentary like get a lot of hate and harassment.
They do because it's really people sad. Will. It's so sad. People will just point out inconsistencies in their stories. But it's like, look, when you've been abused for 10 years of your life, it's not going to be all.
And
set
also,
in stone.
You're a child. So how are you going to remember every? Like now, you're an adult. Like. You're not gonna remember everything.
Exactly. Like people just make point out inconsistencies and stuff, and it's really, really sad. But basically, like you said, with the how we're groomed by media, I think Louis Theroux said this. Mm-hmm. And sorry, but if Louis Theroux agrees that your documentary is good, then it's a good documentary. Gospel. Bible.
Yep.
Love that. But one. Yeah, no, basically I'm pretty sure it was Louis Theroux who said that Michael Jackson very successfully groomed the entire world because it was seen by a lot of people to be an extremely acceptable thing that he hung around and had sleepovers with little children.
Whereas other people might not get away with that if they weren't talented.
Absolutely not.
Likeable.
Absolutely not. And to be fair, it's a shame because Michael Jackson was abused as a child. And yeah. I feel like, you know, he's very much like one thing which is very much to say about Michael Jackson is that obviously, allegedly, he was a byproduct of abuse.
It's a cycle of abuse. All these people, and it's the same with R. Kelly. I recently listened to a podcast on R. Kelly. He was abused.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's we need to just, like, see people for what they are. And I don't mean that in, like, a really monolithic sense. Like, oh, they're just monsters. What we need to see is, okay, we need to accept that this person has abused people. Mm-hmm. And
how can we prevent that?
Yeah, because otherwise, we need to, like, if we don't accept that their victims are going to go on to make more victims.
Exactly.
So it's Oh, we could talk about that for hours, couldn't we?
Oh, yeah.
But I think that might be good for now. This was delightful.
Thank it was you. Great. We need to do this again.
I would love to.
We have a good back and forth going.
I think we do.
We really do.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, we should do this again.
Definitely.
I'd love this. So the people can find you. Do you want to tell them like where to find you?
I find me on YouTube. Just type in Jordan Teresa. And then on Instagram, it's Jordan A Teresa. And then Twitter is Jordan X Teresa.
Yes,
that's it.
I enjoy your social medias,
thank
especially
you.
Your tweets. They're very funny.
Thank you very much.
They made me laugh. They're good. Yeah, well, that's it for today, folks. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Yeah, if you enjoyed it, rate and review on all the whatever podcast app you're using, and have a good day or night wherever you are. Do you want to do you know, in Toy Story where they go bye-bye now, bye-bye
bye-bye
bye-bye now,
bye-bye
now,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
Bye.